Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. Today, we have a very special treat. We are going to spend a full hour talking with one of Latin America's most, I think, impressive and probably most important elder statesmen. He's not all that old, but he's had a lifetime of experience that is extraordinarily impressive as well as impactful. And we're delighted to have a chance to catch up with him, to bring to bear his experiences as the UN ambassador of his native country, Peru, to again, to the United Nations, his role as his country's foreign minister, and not least that of its first vice president. His name is Francisco Tudela. He is a personal friend of mine, I'm proud to say, as well as a revered leader in a part of the world we have frankly not been paying enough attention to. And for reasons we're going to get into in the course of this hour, that's a grievous mistake and one that must be corrected straight away. Mr. Vice President, it is wonderful to have you back on Securing America, sir. Welcome once again.
Thank you very much, Frank. I'm delighted to be in your program. It's always a very important opportunity to communicate ideas, especially to the U.S., because it's a fact that Latin America seems a very far away place, but in fact, it's very near the U.S., and I think it's vital to the U.S., and to the U.S. survival in the future.
Amen. We're going to develop that thought in a succession of various data points that I think will emphasize why that is so true. Let's start with your native Peru. It is a country that has been beset now for well over a year by some very turbulent political developments, starting, I guess, with the election of President Castillo some time ago. Give us the backstory to his election and then what happened in the subsequent months.
I would try to synthesize this. What happened is that we weren't in a normal political system, because Marxists, neo-Marxists, what the French call the gauche caviar, that is the champagne left, had made very substantial inroads into Peruvian politics. And so we were already on the left. But in the 2021 campaign, presidential campaign, Mr. Castillo gave a very simple message: no more poor in a rich country. That sounds very easy, but Peru had been the economic miracle of Latin America and was an enduring miracle with continuous growth. And what Castillo was doing is tricking the electorate, selling the effects of the COVID pandemic that had began in December 1919 and went all through 1920 and most of 2021 as not the cause of the crisis in Peru, because all around the world, COVID has created an economic crisis. In Peru, 50% of retail business closed to never open again. The sub-employment grew from 8 million to 13 million. Unemployment rose, etc. So you had a problem. You had an economic crisis. He never mentioned COVID. He said, it's the system. We have to change the constitution. And that is nonsense, because a constitution to work has to be something concrete, something real that is lived. And the 1993 constitution was written down not copying German or Spanish constitutions, but thinking about the experience, the horrible experience we had had with socialism during the military government, the 1980s, the fight against Shining Path with more than 30,000 dead, the hyperinflation, 6,714% of inflation, minus $150 million in reserves in the central bank, so less than zero. We were completely broke. And so when we made, I was a member of the Constituent Assembly, when we wrote that constitution, we reflected on the Peruvian experience, on what worked, what didn't work, what the Peruvian people were doing in real life, and they were trying to escape from state controls. And so
Let me just ask a quick question here, sir, if I may.
Was very successful.
Yeah.
And Castillo tricked the people.
And this is where communists invariably go, is it not?
Making them think that the crisis created by COVID was, in fact, a crisis of the system due to the Constitution. And none of his adversaries was able to refute this trick because they weren't aware of it. They never thought about it. They were not, in fact, very thoughtful candidates. And so that led him to power. Once in power, he infiltrated the whole state with extreme left militants that came originally from they were ex-Shining Path, the Tupac Amaru revolutionary movement. And so the Peruvian state tilted to the far left. And then he tried to give a coup d'etat on December the 7th. He announced his coup d'etat in national TV. He dissolved Congress. He dissolved the judiciary. He dissolved the Constitutional Court. But the country didn't follow him. So he had to escape. He tried to escape to the Mexican embassy and was arrested and now is in jail.
Okay, so this is a very comprehensive treatment of how we got to where we are today. And again, you've talked, I think, quite persuasively about sort of the bait and switch that communists often engage in. Interestingly enough, when he mounted the coup against his own government, it resulted, as you say, in the repudiation of him by the Congress and by the people of Peru. What came next in terms of his replacement by another Marxist?
Well, he was repudiated because of corruption, immense corruption in the state. Stealing money, making gifts to his family, buying opposition congressmen through posts in the administration to the families or friends, etc. And all this was discovered by the national procurator, who was very brave. She's Mrs. Benavides. And I think that corruption precipitated the coup. I think the coup was planned for the end of January, beginning of December, because they were mobilizing the people from the coca cultivation zones to Lima. But they hadn't yet the people in Lima. But once the confessions of the people that had been arrested by the procurator began to be public, he was in panic.
Hold the thought, Pancho. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Francisco Tudela right after this. Thank you.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Even though Michelle Bachmann is no longer a conservative leader in Congress, she continues to strive to protect our country from all enemies, foreign and domestic. In a great new interview with Economic War Room host Kevin Freeman, Ms. Bachmann warns about an impending stealthy and disastrous surrender of American sovereignty by Joe Biden. His administration is negotiating to make the World Health Organization's discredited communist director general the sole and compulsory arbiter of what constitutes a public health emergency. Worse yet, just about anything from climate change to guns to racism can and will be considered such a health crisis. We must prevent the World Health Organization and its masters in Beijing from compounding what they did to us during the COVID pandemic by withdrawing from the WHO and impeaching Joe Biden and anyone else who would give it control over our lives. This is Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back to this edition of Securing America with an eminent political leader of Latin America. His name is Francisco Tudela, formerly served, among other things, as the first vice president of his country, Peru. And we've been hearing about turmoil that's been taking place in that country, and I hated to interrupt you abruptly in getting to where we are at the moment in Peru, but we're vitally in need of an update as to who's running the country now and under what circumstances, because we're hearing a lot about political upheavals, demonstrations, violence even. What is going on at the moment, sir?
Well, the vice president of Mr. Castillo is Mrs. Dina Boluarte. She's now the president of Peru. She's a Marxist-Leninist. She participated as a minister in the cabinets of Castillo. She seems to have moderated the government and to be fighting against the violence that Castillo and Aníbal Torres, his prime minister, organized during a year to take power. So all this violence in Peru, the blocking of roads, the killing of policemen, there are more than 1,000 officers in hospital. Of course, there are 70 dead due to violence, but police has not been using weapons. And so there are suspicions that most of that people have been killed by snipers from the violent groups that in fact are Shining Path and Tupac Amaru and Mohadef, who is the organization that came after those groups were defeated militarily in the 1990s. And so she established a state of emergency in the country to fight against this violence, but she didn't implement it. She sent the police unarmed to control this, and she hasn't sent the army. And the army in a state of emergency can be employed in the most difficult situations.
And in that so sense, does that mean that she is not really intent on suppressing the mob?
She has a heart and mind problem. Her heart is with the far left from where she is. But at the same time, she's now the head of state and has responsibilities, and she has to restitute public order in the country. And so she's divided.
Perhaps also the fact that the mobs are trying to have her removed is a calculation
because
as well.
The mobs are, they are more than mobs. They are organized groups. They are not much. They must be in all the country around 10,000 people. It's an army, not a social movement. It's a far left army, but not a social movement. Without a charismatic leader, it's not a revolution. It's an attempt to take power through violence, forcing anticipated elections. You will see that the far left and some parties in the center right have fallen into this narrative, believe that if you make anticipated elections, let's say at the end of this year, then everyone will go home and everything will be reestablished in order. That's not true. They want anticipated elections to present this violence as legal protests, to present the 70 dead as martyrs of their democracy, because they want a totalitarian democracy, like the one you had in the communist countries in the 20th century.
Yes.
And at the same time...
And have today in parts of Latin America as well, no?
Yes, well, not in the same way, because postmodern Marxists in Latin America believes in deconstruction. They deconstruct nationality, they deconstruct sexuality, they deconstruct all the fundamental things, and using as a pretext the climate change and whatever, they mobilize different social groups to fracture the unity of the nation. They are doing the same in the US, so this is not a new thing.
No,
the American public.
For reasons we'll be talking about, it sounds all too familiar, really. But
so
Francisco, let me just ask you.
Modern.
Yeah, let's talk about where you go from here. Does this look as though these elections will be accelerated and that you will find, I think you're right to say, the mobs or the army, if you wish, of this sort of insurrectionist left, using the fact of these accelerated elections to try to intensify their disruptive behavior in order to essentially coerce capitulation by
the
people?
Well, center-right parties and right parties in Congress have blocked anticipated elections. So until now...
So they'll go on schedule, but that's another year or two from now.
All attempts to pass a law to have anticipated elections have failed. Mm. And at the same time, they want a new constitution. Of course, that's pure utopia. They would destroy the social order and an economic order that has been working very well for the last 30 years.
And that was Castillo's agenda too, no?
That was Castillo's agenda. Castillo's agenda was essentially racial confrontation. All his speeches, he went all around the country with his ministers preaching racial confrontation, preaching cultural confrontation, preaching against the Republic. He said, 2,000 years of republic have been useless, a waste. We have to establish a new state. So the destruction...
This sounds very familiar to our listeners too, I suspect, Pancho. Let me just ask you, as you look at things right now then, and we have to take a short break here in a moment, but is it likely that Boluarte, the current president, will stay in power through to those elections held, I guess, what is it, a year from now, 2 years from now? Or do you see some sort of orderly transition taking place between times? And are the prospects for Peru continuing to be subjected to this kind of turmoil.
I think Peru,
very real.
Peru will be subjected to this turmoil. We don't know if we'll have anticipated elections. If Dina Boluarte deliberately resigned, then she would precipitate anticipated elections, and that would be a chaotic scenario. And at the same time, Peru is the battlefield of the Americas now. And I think that this is something very important for the U.S. to understand.
To which we are going to return. And I appreciate so much your really laying out what's happening in Peru right now, because, well, it's important in its own right, as you say, but it's also evidence of what is going on more broadly in our hemisphere. We're going to talk about that as well as what it means for us here in the United States. And make no mistake, folks, it is of great, great moment in terms of our own security and prosperity. We'll be back to talk about all of that and more with Francisco Tudela, former first vice president of Peru, right after this.
And throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. We are joined for this full hour, I'm proud to say, by Francisco Tudela, a remarkable patriot of his native Peru, as well as a leader there, and I think throughout the hemisphere, as he stands for the principles of freedom and genuine democracy against the forces of the left, which both in Peru, and as we'll be discussing now, have become very, not only prominent, but dominant throughout the hemisphere. Francisco Tudela, again, welcome once more. You have described a nation that is being subjected to a radical leftist assault. It unfortunately is in part being brought about not just by the various, terrorist groups or drug trafficking groups and so on inside Peru, the communists, the hard left, but also forces external to Peru. And I'd like to talk to you first about those within the hemisphere, notably in Bolivia and Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, and beyond, as well as something called the Forum of Sao Paulo, which seems to be bringing them all together for this kind of purpose. Talk us through all that, if you would.
Well, Peru is fighting for constitutional and republican democracy against radical totalitarian pseudo-democracy. It's a big country. It's the size of France and Spain together. It has a substantial coast with good ports in the Pacific. This is strategically essential for the U.S. And this country is under attack now of six Latin American heads of state. We are confronted to six Latin American countries Mexico, Honduras, Brazil, Chile, Bolivia, and Colombia, whose presidents are continuously agitating the violent groups in Peru and are attacking the Peruvian Republic. So the first circle is Peru itself, because all this violence that has been going on for 2 months has been financed by drug trafficking and illegal mining. But drug trafficking and illegal mining is common to Colombia, Peru, and Bolivia. The strategists, of course, are in Havana, Cuba, in Caracas, and that's the second circle. So what they want to build is a drug trafficking crescent inside Latin America that goes from the Chapare in Bolivia through the Peruvian jungle, that Peru is a huge country, up to link with the Putumayo in Colombia. And so the project is against the US, is not to eradicate the coca and poppy production, and to create huge narco states in Latin America. That is what Bolivia is. That is what Colombia is and will become. That is what Mexico is. And that's why you don't have any more conflicts between the drug traffickers and the government in Mexico. And at the same
time, in other words, the narco traffickers are essentially calling the shots in terms of the government as well.
Narco traffickers are part of the left. Let's put it like that, of the far left in all of Latin America, from Mexico to the Magallanes Strait, in all of Latin America. And that's the second circle. And they are attacking us openly. And we have problems through our boundary with Bolivia, because Evo Morales, the ex-president of Bolivia, wants to build an ethno-state that includes the south of Peru, saying that they should build an Aymara state, a Runasur, a movement of ethnic groups. That means the destruction of the country itself. And
that's really the purpose, isn't it, is to combine Bolivia and Peru.
If you destroy and fraction a country, you control it absolutely. And so the first circle is Peruvian leftists and drug traffickers. The second circle is the Foro de Sao Paulo that now is in power in Latin America. So we have to talk of the Foro de Sao Paulo and also of very important governments like the one of Brazil, like the one of Colombia, like the one of Mexico, like the one of Argentina or Chile. So that is not something that we can pass over.
Yeah. And a further word about the Forum of São Paulo. What exactly is it? What did it come from? And who was running it?
Forum of São Paulo is when the Berlin Wall fell, the communists of Latin America, under the leadership of Fidel Castro, and some Spanish groups, as is the case of Podemos, that is a political party in Spain, they organized themselves and founded the Foro de Sao Paulo to create a fourth communist international, to escape the fall of communism in Eastern Europe. Then when in 1991, the Soviet Union dissolved and began a kind of chaotic capitalist process, the Foro of Sao Paulo became very important. Its objectives are all in its website. It's forodesaopaulo.org. Anyone can access that and see their objectives. They have an English version, a Spanish version. And so it's old Marxism in a postmodern presentation. What they want is total power, of course. But the way to get it is through ethnic confrontation, through anti-mining groups, through climate change militants that fight against industries and mining and oil extraction and all.
So these are all techniques for fracturing the countries that or governments,
yes,
that have opposed them.
They have a new concept of democracy by which non-elected groups participate with the same rights as elected groups, and then there is a kind of racial selection of rights under the concept of the plurinational constitution that they want to impose in Peru, but had failed up to now. Let's say that different ethnic groups have different constitutional rights. And of course, the bourgeoisie are the ones that are classified as the colonizers or whatever, and they have less rights, let's say, than an Amazon tribe or the Aymaras. Of course, that's a trick to control society. Divide et impera, said Julius Caesar. That's exactly the technique they are using.
Divide and conquer, indeed. So, Francisco Tudela, we're talking about a transnational enterprise.
That's right.
Born of communist international sort of doctrine and practices that is now being obviously brought to bear by the nations throughout Latin America that embrace its agenda and are part of it. But you mentioned that there's a third circle. Talk quickly about that, if you would, as well.
Well, the third circle is Russia, that is strongly supporting the violent movements in Peru, is Iran, who is very discreet but has a political movement in Peru, through people linked to Iran and Hezbollah, and China. China has a very low profile in all this conflict. If you go and see the Chinese press agencies, they are not applauding what's happening, but they are not criticizing either. Simply, you will not find news about what's happening. But of course, they have a huge presence in the continent and growing. In Peru, you have more than 220 important Chinese corporations, and you have the first port that is in majority owned by China in the whole continent, that is the port of Chancay. But of course, you have the administration of the Panama Canal by China, Chinese companies. And it's very interesting because in a dialogue of Jordan Peterson with a professor of Chinese politics that has lived in China and teaches at Chinese universities, he describes this very interesting process in China. The Chinese themselves thought that they were evolving towards a normal political system, a normal democratic system, until Xi Jinping came to power.
Hold the thought, Mr. Vice President. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back to pick up on what came next with China and what its implications are for Latin America, as well as for us here in the United States. That and much more with Francisco Tudela of Peru, straight ahead. Thanks for tuning in to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney. If you find the contents of this program to be informative and valuable, I'd like to ask you to consider playing a part in supporting the organization that makes Securing America possible, our Center for Security Policy. We call the center the home of the special forces in the war of ideas. We feature such warriors daily on Securing America as they diagnose the dangers facing our nation, develop strategies for thwarting them, and work with other veteran national security practitioners, legislators, and the American people to execute those strategies. Thanks to our friends at Salem Media, we're able to expand greatly awareness of the Center for Security Policy's efforts and their impact. Like the real special forces, our effectiveness depends on having the ammunition, in our case, money, to perform our mission. Please consider making a tax-deductible contribution at securefreedom.org. Thanks. We're back, and we are visiting with Francisco Tudela. He is sharing with us insights into what has been happening to his native land, of which he formerly was the first vice president, among other very senior positions he held. Peru is not the only nation, however, that is being subjected to very, very dangerous developments and trends, not least at the hands of the Chinese Communist Party. And I, again, had to interrupt you, Mr. Vice President. I wanted you to pick up on what Xi Jinping did to change the direction of Chinese policy, or greatly accelerate, I guess, maybe, his Communist Party's agenda, and how that bears directly on what's happening now in both your country and others in Latin America.
Well, first of all, the presence of China is very important in Latin America, but they have made a point in not getting involved in ideology. So the press agencies, the Chinese press agencies, etc., do not have an open position about what's happening. But they have a huge presence in the continent and a huge collaboration with this postmodern Marxist government. In the case of Peru, we are in the middle of a battle. And of course, in China, things were evolving for the Chinese in a normal way until the Communist Party panicked and felt that if they went on with capitalism without political controls, the Communist Party would be displaced from power. And so what they did was to enforce a system by example, in all great Chinese corporations, you have a communist cell, a cell from the Chinese Communist Party. When Jack Ma made inconvenient political remarks, he was demoted. He disappeared for 2 months. He was re-educated. His companies were intervened under the concept of anti-monopolic law. And many of the big corporations, in the case of Costco, let's say, the maritime company that has built a port in Peru, it's a state-owned company, so in fact its funding is helped by the Chinese state. It's not like an American corporation that has to go into the open and through the stock exchange and through the financial system has to finance itself to make and develop the projects. In the case of China, there is a link between being a member of a Communist Party, being in a big corporation, and getting the funds you need, let's say the seed capital to develop projects. I'm not saying that Chinese corporations are artificial or are not successful. They are. But at the same time, there is a big degree of political control on them. And it depends on the compliance to that political control to the benefits they will get. So in fact, they are not neutral in this conflict. And I believe that if Peru falls, they will have very pliable and compliant governments in Peru and everywhere in Latin America, because that's the bottom line. Well, now you have
violence. I would just argue that violence, Mr. Vice President, if you really look from the Arctic to the Antarctic,
that's right.
Governments of the major ones, at least, are all now under the thrall of the Chinese Communist Party, including our own. And this brings me to the topic that I want to complete our interview with you about, and that is, talk us through the stakes for the United States if these three concentric circles succeed in not only finishing off the Democratic Republic of Peru, but also consolidate power through the form of San Paulo or otherwise, really throughout the region. What are the implications for us?
I will develop that idea with an example. In after Pearl Harbor, the U.S. realized that they should have more influence in Latin America, and they should fight Japanese influence in Latin America. Because if they lost Latin America to the Axis, let's say to the Japanese in the Pacific coast and to the Germans in the Atlantic coast, then the US would be isolated facing Japan in the Pacific. You have to take into account that in those times, in the 90s, during the Second World War, China and Russia, the Soviet Union then, were allies of the US, were not against the US. So you had the Eurasiatic mass fighting against the Axis, the Chinese fighting against Japan, and at the same time, the US securing Latin America, because it was essential to have a Pan-American Union. The Pan-American countries, the Pan-American Union, got together in January 1941 and declared war on the Axis. Brazil, Mexico sent troops to Europe. So in fact, and there are huge reserves that the US needed to confront the Axis during the Second World War. Now it's the inverse proposition. What you have is Russia and China as adversaries in world geopolitics. Japan as an ally, but Japan is localized in a very, let's say in global terms, in a very specific place in the North Pacific. And at the same time, you have China and Russia and Iran supporting the Foro de Sao Paulo, who has been successful and has won most of Latin American governments.
We have to break for just one last block.
Latin America.
Stand by, Mr. Vice President. We're going to come back and make the key point, which is we are now being isolated in our own hemisphere. And what are the implications of that? Stay by. We will be right back with more. Mr. Vice President, stay tuned. Francisco Tudela is in the house. Be right back. Welcome back to this final installment of this very important conversation with one of, I think, the preeminent figures in our hemisphere, a man who, among other things, has served his country, native country of Peru, in posts like the ambassador to the United Nations, the foreign minister, and as well as the first vice president of Peru. His name is Francisco Tudela. He has honored us with a full hour of conversation, and he's led us up to the critical moment for this American audience, I believe, and that is having laid out what is taking place, not just in Peru, but in countries throughout the hemisphere, the efforts to achieve and consolidate power in the hands of the radical left, Marxists, communists, certainly enemies of our country, I believe. We're watching other enemies external to our hemisphere moving in to aid and enable those local adversaries. The question is, what does that mean for our country? And Mr. Vice President, you were laying out an historical sort of contrast between the situation we found ourselves in at the beginning of World War II. So if we can stipulate that the hemisphere is now perilously close to being completely dominated by these various adversaries, foreign and domestic, preeminent among them, I would argue, communist China, what does that likely portend for the United States here at home?
Well, for Western civilization, for Christian values, for freedom, for our conception of the human being, for all Western philosophy since Aristotle up to now, it's a big challenge. It means a conflict in which our way of life is in danger. If you see what's happening in Europe, you have the US with its allies through NATO, but the combination of the COVID epidemic with the Ukraine war shows us a weakened Europe. We do not perceive what's behind Russia, that is the Euro-Asiatic Union with China, the Euro-Asiatic Economic Community with the countries of Central Asia. So, in fact, we are facing a very complex world in which the stakes are and the cards are against the West.
Stacked against us, yes. And you know, you've mentioned a couple of places that are of concern, of course. I would argue that it's even worse than that, because what the Chinese and others have been doing in our own hemisphere, of course, the Chinese have been doing with this Belt and Road Initiative, as they call it, throughout the places you've mentioned, plus
it's a world
Africa
policy,
as well.
A world policy. The Belt and Road policy must be understood as a prolongation of the Eurasiatic Union with Russia and China. It has to be understood as a prolongation of the Eurasiatic European Community. When we hear about a war in Ukraine, we think that the world ends in Russia, but we don't see what's behind Russia. Central Asia, China, India, Afghanistan, Iran, etc., etc., etc. And so...
All of which, I'm suggesting, are now essentially buying into this sort of colonial infrastructure build-out they call the Belt and Road Initiative, as well as Africa.
What's happening is that the West is fighting for its being, for its identity. Latin America considered itself traditionally part of the West. It was unthinkable for us not to be Euroasiatic or Chinese communist or whatever you can think of. But now, through the Foro de Sao Paulo, through the victory of postmodern Marxism in most Latin American countries, the rise to power of ex-terrorists like President Petro of Colombia, who is very radical, all founders of the Foro de Sao Paulo, like is the case of Lula in Brazil, and the danger that that poses for the freedom of Bolsonaro, let's say, in the future.
Yes. Who says he's going back to Brazil.
We are facing a huge international enemy. And it's difficult to criticize because countries superpowers like the U.S. have different priorities in the world. But I think that in the 2000s, Latin America was neglected, both by Republican governments and Democratic government.
So true. So, Mr. Vice President, we're almost out of time. We've got about a minute left. Yes. I just wanted to say, in previous conversations with you, you've made three key points about new threats we will face in this country from a Latin America and a hegemonistic China more broadly. As I recall, they were illegal immigration.
Massive.
Ramp up further.
People will run away from this.
Drug trafficking will be greatly intensified. And we will find in our, not backyard, our front yard, Latin America, military forces, missiles and others, ports perhaps among them, that will be weaponized against our country. This is a formula for disaster, I think, for this country, is it not?
It's very dangerous for the U.S. It has strategic consequences in the Pacific. The Pacific is the main scenario now of even military confrontation between Japan, Taiwan, the U.S., and China. And, of course, Russia will not be neutral, and the Latin American countries dominated by Marxists will not be neutral in those circumstances. So there is a very present and real danger for the West.
Of the first order, strategic in character.
Is the U.S.
Mr. Vice President, the time has flown by. I can't believe it's been an hour, but thank you for yours, and thank you for your expertise and insights. Come back to us soon if you would. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again next time here at Securing America, and that you feel better equipped as a result of this occasion to help us protect the country we love, and that you will now go forth and multiply.